Welcome to the No BS Spiritual Book Club's live streaming interview series, where leading New Thought teachers, speakers, and authors share the intimate stories behind the 10 best spiritual books that inspired them the most on their spiritual journey. From well-known classics to hidden gems you might never have heard of, the No BS Spiritual Book Club saves you time and money by sharing reliable recommendations from those who've walked the path before you. The No BS Spiritual Book Club, the only No BS guide to the best spiritual books to inspire your own journey of self-discovery. Here's your host, founder of the No BS Spiritual Book Club, Sandy Sedgebeer.
Hello and welcome. Joining me today to share the 10 spiritual books that inspired him the most on his life journey is international teacher, best-selling author, and channel, Steve Rother. A 5-times presenter at the United Nations on 2 continents, and the only presenter we believe to have taught a class on channeling to the UN staff, Steve Rother has been channeling The Group, a collection of angelic beings, for over 28 years. His Beacons of Light monthly messages, featuring timely reminders from The Group, are distributed internationally in many languages and have been published in the prestigious Sedona Journal of Emergence every month for more than 2 decades. Steve Rother, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Sandy. Good to be here.
So your 10 best list spans a number of classic spiritual stroke personal development books published between the 1950s and the 1990s, when you received a directive from The Group to stop reading books. That sounds like hell to me. How did you cope with that?
It was very difficult. Well, I grew up not reading, if you can understand that. I did not read in school. I wasn't interested in reading. And then I got a job where I was actually working for a periodical distributor, and I got books for free. And that's when I started reading. But then I only had a fairly short number of years before The Group came in. And like you said, told me, and I can still read. I just can't read. I can't read material I can get confused with their information. It's real simple. If it's a channeled book or something, I'll read it. I'll read a paragraph. I'll go to the next paragraph and I won't remember what I read. They just kind of remove it from me. So it's not that I can't do anything. It's just that it doesn't seem to work the same way.
So book one on your list, The Power of Positive Thinking by Dr. Norman Vincent Peale, which is a massive classic. And this was published in 1952 and is regarded as the precursor to The Secret.
I didn't realize that. I hadn't realized that. That makes sense, because it was certainly a precursor for me. It was just like I read something and all of a sudden I realized there's magic here and I have to get more. I have to find more. I have to, it really opened me up incredibly. And that was just one of them, because there was a whole bunch of them. I bought the entire Wilshire Library. This was, it was published by a publishing company by the name of Wilshire Library, and they had Norman Vincent Peale's books, they had Anderson's books, they had all these different books that all fit into this. And I read almost an entire library when I discovered it. It was just incredible.
Absolutely. So was this after you had your, let's say, awakening and gave up being a contractor and started becoming an author and a teacher and a channel?
No, this was before. This was pre-set up to basically get me in a position to where I could understand what they were bringing through. I had to do some homework. I had to do some changing of my thought patterns, basically, so I could accept a lot of what was coming in. I was very much of a contractor. I was, I had 7 guys that worked for me. Every other word started with F. It was just a different world entirely that I was living in. And all of a sudden, I started this whole different level of work. It was just...
So they made you clean up your act.
Between that and Barbara, my wife, making me clean up my act, yes, exactly.
Yeah.
It took a while, but I got there.
So number two is another you know, classic, The Magic of Thinking Big, Acquire the Secrets of Success by David Schwartz and Melvin Powers. That one was published in 1959.
And again, The Magic of Thinking Big was just it was another explosion about how we can create magic in our world if we just eliminate some of our limited thinking. Some of the process around that. We all know that positive thinking helps. We all know that positive, you know, the group says we are creator beings, real simple. So that which we can balance between our head and our heart, in other words, we have to feel it and we also have to think it. So it has to be balanced between the two. If we balance it between the two, we manifest it, real simple. And I was manifesting a whole bunch of things that had limits on it until I read that book. That book helped me to remove a lot of the limits that I had put on myself as to what I would allow in, what I would allow to be my truth. And, you know, who it had a lot to do with who I was trying to please at the time, you know, because we all want to present in some way like that. So that's pretty much how it works.
So do you think then that these books that we get drawn to, you know, we're kind of being guided there, not because, you know, we need to learn something, but we need to remember something.
That was the name of the first book. That was the name of the first book. Remember.
The first book that you wrote.
That I wrote. Yeah, exactly. That you helped me with tremendously. You were the editor of my first book. Here I am coming out of the general contractor with all this weight behind me and everything, and I come up with this beautiful information, and you helped me put it into words that people could understand, because I couldn't write in the beginning. So you basically taught me how to write, is what you did, by helping me edit those first books. That was
incredible. Thank you for that shout out. Let's move on to book three, which is Three Magic Words. I do not know this one. The Key to Power, Peace and Plenty by U.S. Anderson, published in 1954.
Right. U.S. Anderson had, again, along the same vein as all these other books that we're talking about so far, just about magic, that we can create magic if we believe in it. It was real simple. Now, U.S. Anderson took a leap, and it was a very difficult leap. And it may be why you didn't know about him, because he wasn't that terribly popular. The three magic words were, "You are God." Now, with that underlying his thing back in the 1950s and 1960s, when I read it, that was almost blasphemy.
Yeah.
So it was. But the message behind it made so much sense. And he kept building it up through the whole book. He said, "Now you can skip to the end right now and read the three magic words, but you'll spoil it." You know, he kept telling us about the whole thing, about the whole process. And I did. I cheated. I went for it.
You know, I did a little bit of research on him. Very interesting. And you know, when you think about that era, his concept of reality, as explained in his books, is so in line with new thought teachings now. I mean, he said,
well, that's it. It was like, and back then, Sandy, I know I was being led to these books. Yeah. It was just amazing. And then I got a job where I was in publishing, and we had I got all my books for free, all my paperback books for free. I got a 40% discount on my hardback books, and all the magazines I could read, all free of charge. We used to carry around books in our back pocket, but paperback books in our back pocket. They have to tear the cover off to send the cover back for credit for the publisher. And we would walk around with these books without covers. And as we read them, we'd tear off the pages and throw them away. So that's kind of how I learned to read, because we had all these books that we were cycling through. So I had all of a sudden, from not reading at all to going to a place where I was inundated with material, I had a wide variety of material that I could have chosen from, that I could have gone through, but I know I was being led. I was being taught in a specific order. And I knew that. I can see that now.
I love what Anderson said. I mean, we know this today, but back then it must have been really life-changing for people. He said, universal mind is a vast and all-encompassing mental and spiritual being in whom all things and events exist. And the principal quality of this mind is that it is just one, infinite in size, eternal in scope, and nothing exists outside it. I mean, and this is just what many cosmologists are only just beginning to see.
That's true. That's true. He really stepped forward and stepped into it and dared to say some things that were very challenging to the far right. And he did it anyway. And I don't know if I wasn't aware of controversy or anything around that at the time, so I couldn't testify to that. But I can tell you the book was not as popular as many of the other books that I read during those times. That particular book planted seeds in me that I have no doubt the group was behind. They were sitting there going, turn the page, come on, read the next one, read the next one. I felt that very much, and still to this day, I feel it. Yeah, and I miss reading. I mean, I still read fiction once in a while, but I really miss getting into some good material and seeing somebody else's perspective of life in a different way. I really enjoy that. I miss that.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So book number four is another classic, Journeys Out of the Body, Robert Monroe. Published in 1971.
This was my venture off into weirdness. Good way to put it. I went with three magic words, with magic of thinking big, with all the rest of them, where all they fit into mainstream, real simple. But now I'm getting into weird stuff over here because I'm reading this book about this guy who lays down for a nap one afternoon. In his office, he's got a couch in his office. He lays down, he puts his hand down on the side of the couch and it goes through the floorboards. And he's able to feel what's below the floorboards. And I go, okay, you've got my attention. Real simple, you've got my attention. I don't care if this is, you know, whatever it is. And I read the book and it was so practical. It was so practical. It's all about out-of-body experiences, about what they called astral projection back then. And it still comes up every once in a while in the group's messages. We talk about stepping out of the body. We talk about moving aside from the body for a moment, what we call the body suit, and so forth. And I think a lot of that came from those early messages of working with that. And then I read several books about astral projection, and I tried like crazy to do it. I got to tell you, I tried. Every night I would go through these exercises of doing these things. And there was only one time that I think I was successful. I got out of bed. I went to the foot of my bed. Barbara was still in bed. I saw her in bed. And I went to the foot of the bed and these entities grabbed my hand and started spinning me around. I got scared. I was back in my body and that was it. I never got out again, but yeah. I got the information. I got the information, which is really all I needed, more than the experience of being able to do that. Yeah. And I woke Barbara up and I told her all about it. She goes, okay, all right.
Yeah, what have you been drinking? Yeah. Number five, also by Robert Monroe, Far Journeys, when he was talking about reincarnation and near-death experiences, I believe. That one was published in 1985.
Right. He was starting to connect the spirituality to his experiences. That's pretty much exactly what took place with it. And at that point, that's really when I started looking into other material and things that were kind of off the draft, off the norm in many ways, and started receiving some incredible information about that. And I had all these books stacked up on my headboard, and I'll never forget reading one day what was said about it. There was a theory about that. I think it came from Einstein, that if you have your books on your headboard for more than 3 months and still don't read them, you don't need to read them. You've got them by osmosis. So I was I had all my books stacked up on my headboard. It was amazing.
And do you think it worked?
No, I don't.
No.
But it sort of did, because just having a book and looking at the book, looking at the instrap, if you read it or you know what it's about, you're influenced by that book just by having it in your presence in some way. So it does work to some degree, yeah.
Yeah.
I still like to read, though.
Yeah, I love your list because it really takes me back, you know, to the time in the 70s and 80s when I was reading all these books. Strangers Among Us by Ruth Montgomery, published in 1979.
Now we're stepping into the woo-woo stuff.
Yeah.
Now I'm getting away from practicality altogether and seeing this strange stuff, which is nonfiction, by the way.
Yeah.
So I wasn't into reading fiction at the time at all, because I am now, because it's all I can basically read. But I wasn't into it at the time. So this was a big stretch for me, because I couldn't decide whether this was real or whether this was. And she just grabbed my heart. These messages went straight through. I felt like I was channeling them. And the interesting thing about this, Sandy, was that many years later, I had no conscious memory of this, but after channeling the group for, I don't know, maybe 10, 15 years already, I picked up one of her books, and I had forgotten all about it, that she channeled these entities. And one of them was Arthur Ford, who was a famous medium who passed away. She was a good friend of Arthur Ford. And he passed over, and he started talking to her from the other side. But there was also other beings that were working with her at the same time. And they were called Lily, Art, and the Group. And I'd forgotten all about that. So anyway, is it the same stuff? I'm sure on the other side of the veil, they're all laughing their heads off that we call one the other thing and the other. They're all coming from basically the same place. And it's, you know, how we interpret it, basically. It was interesting.
And that book was the first time I came across the concept of walk-ins.
Yes.
And I remember a boss of mine that I was working for, as straight as could be, had no interest in anything woo-woo, bought that book for me as a Christmas gift. He said, I thought you might like it. I often wondered, you know, what did he really think of me with a book like that? I mean, it was far out even for me back then. But she was, she had a career as a top White House correspondent.
No, she was very well respected in her fields, which is why I think she was published, because back then we had publishers that would only take certain people, and you had agents and all sorts of other things back in the old days.
Yeah, she covered every administration from Roosevelt to Johnson. Wow. Exactly. So when somebody with that kind of background produces a book like this, you know, there's got to be something in it.
Well, that's what opened the door for her. And she had such information. Her first couple of books were great. Her third book, I think, was Strangers Among Us, where she introduced the idea of walk-ins. That just changed the metaphysical world. Everybody was a walk-in from that point forward. You'd meet somebody, they'd tell you how there was a walk. They were a walk-in 5 years ago or something of that, because they had that concept in their mind. Today, it's kind of faded, I will say, that people don't realize that happens as much as it does, but there's all sorts of things that happen to our spirits that we know very little about. So it was a real eye opener for me, that whole series of books.
Yeah, because your seventh book was Here and Hereafter, also by her. That was actually published earlier in 1968, and that one was all about reincarnation.
Right. Yeah, and I read them out of order. I didn't read them in the order that she wrote them. I read them in the order in which they kind of came to me. I had my little stack of we called them strip books because the covers were missing. But I had my little stack of strip books by my headboard all the time. So I'd jump into it. But Here and Hereafter was really, again, a way to tie a lot of this experience into what I understood to be spiritual. I was raised in a Christian religion, believed in it, thought it was great, thought that was, you know, all there was. until I started reading some of these books, and I realized there was so much more out there, and that even the religion that I had studied had only covered a small portion of some of the things they were talking about. And it was just absolutely incredible. I got very excited about it, read everything I could get my hands on, especially after Here and Hereafter. It was that book was probably the book that turned me towards spirituality, the way that I understand spirituality today.
Mm. Yeah. And then there's Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, by Judy Blume. So this is a book that's aimed at 12, 13-year-olds. How come you read this one?
Well, girls, 12 to 13-year-old girls. It's aimed at girls. It was all about women's empowerment. It's the first book that I read that was actually a nonfiction book. It's the first fiction book that I read, because it was a story. Turns out that she's just this incredible author today. She still is an incredible author. They made movies out of Hey God, It's Me, Margaret. But basically, that was an understanding that was written for young girls. She was really good at writing about sexuality, awakening, empowerment, without all the dramas, without all the guilt, without all the other things that we so often see associated with it. She was just a complete eye-opener. And I was very interested in sexuality at that time in my life. I was probably in my early 30s and really exploding sexually myself. So I was always curious what it looked like from a girl's standpoint. So when I came across this book, and Hey God, It's Me, Margaret, that grabbed my attention right away. So I started reading this book. Turns out she's an excellent writer. I was able to put myself in the situations that these girls were going through. And I think I really understood a lot about the feminine aspect at that point in my life. And I think I read several of her books after that. It was just like, oh, good, we've got another one in the series type of thing. So I actually read several of her books. I couldn't wait to get on her book. And she even wrote an adult sexy novel once called Wifey. That she wrote. It wasn't a big success. She went back to writing for kids. Her adult writing didn't take off the way that she wanted, but it was a very sexy novel. And she had just this incredibly open idea of sexuality. And it was just incredibly freeing. And she was teaching this openly. By the way, I will mention that recently her books were banned in Florida and Texas. So that made, just completely.
Because of the sexuality?
Because of the content.
Oh, because of the God thing. Okay.
Because of opening the sexuality. It was about sexuality, not the God thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Her books have been banned in Texas and Florida at this point. And I'm part of a group that's working to try and change that, to try to change some of the energies around the fear around people reading books.
That particular book, someone said that if there was a top 10 list of books for, you know, the most common rites of passage for preteen girls, this would top the list.
It was an eye-opener for me. I mean, completely. I was able to see sexuality and life from the other side, from the feminine side rather than the masculine side. And keep in mind, even though at this time I hadn't been into my contracting very long, I was still very male. I was still very, you know, hey guys, let's that's who I was for a long time. So this really opened me up completely to the feminine side. And I was able to see so much in all of her books. Were written about from the feminine aspect. They were written about girls having trouble with sexuality, dealing with it, awakening, all the puberty stuff, all the things that they would find. She highly encouraged masturbation, which I think is one of the reasons she got banned in Florida and Texas.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're scared of that stuff there.
Well, you know, we really We really do like to stop people reading the things that are going to be helpful to them. You know, let's keep people helpless. On that note, we're going to take a short break. You're listening to a No BS Spiritual Book Club interview and sharing the 10 books that had the biggest influence on his life journey is internationally renowned spiritual teacher, best-selling author and channel, Steve Rother, who's founder of the Espavo organization, a leading 501c3 corporation dedicated to spreading light on planet Earth. We'll be back with more of Steve Rother's inspirational books, along with some insights into his life's work and what the group have to say about where humanity is heading after this break. Stay tuned.
Om Times TV.
Maya Angelou once said that there is no greater agony than bearing an untold story inside you. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and when I'm not hosting Om Times Media's flagship radio show, What Is Going On, and the No BS Spiritual Book Club, I help people share their untold stories. Books are my life, my joy, and my passion, and there is no greater reward than helping aspiring writers get their books out of their heads and into the hands of those who are waiting to read them. If you feel that you have a book in you, but don't know where to begin, visit sedgbeer.com, click on the Work With Me tab, and find out how my experience helping others tell their stories might be just what you've been looking for. That's sedgbeer.com, sedgbeer.com.
Imagine becoming a super influencer. Reinvent yourself. Invest in your brand, and then manifest your success with a robust, spheric approach. Om Times Media and Broadcasting offers a unique and multifaceted way to become the spiritual and conscious influencer you deserve to be by putting your message across our powerful platform with its proven record of integrity and excellence. Through our produced shows, Om Times offers the opportunity to become a social media TV personality, a radio show host, an Om Times magazine columnist, and a syndicated podcaster, all in one shot. By live streaming your show on Om Times TV and broadcasting it across the extensive Om Times radio and TV networks, you become more than a host. You become an ambassador and a force for positive change. Om Times. Open yourself to the possibilities.
There are 16 million children struggling with hunger in America. That's 1 in 5 daughters, sons, neighbors, and classmates who don't know where their next meal is coming from. Yet billions of pounds of good food go to waste every year. It's time we do something about it. Feeding America is a nationwide network of food banks that helps provide meals to millions of kids and families in need. Visit feedingamerica.org to help them feed even more. Together, we can solve hunger. Together, we're feeding America.
Welcome back. Steve Rother, book number 9 is another book by Judy Blume, one I've never heard of, published in 1974, and it's called Blubber.
Blubber was, it was one, again, I was into nonfiction books, reading everything I could from Judy Blume. She came out with this really adorable novel about a fat girl trying to get along, trying to discover herself, her sexuality, herself in the world, and what that was like. And it really opened up a lot for me. That book, even though I read it strictly as fiction, I wasn't that interested in the outcome or the message that was in it. I was reading it for fun. And it absolutely opened me up to hypersensitive, especially women, hypersensitive women, hypersensitivity in general, how that works, what that looks like, how we project all the time through this thing that the group calls the bodysuit, what that's like and how it's different than our normal brain, how things work differently. It showed the negative side of it because it was all about this girl's problems. Going through school, I think she was a teenager or a preteen at the time. And of course, being fat, being big in any way, she was made fun of. She was bullied to some degree all the time. And it was really interesting how she turned it around and what she did with it. But that book, even though it was written for girls, it was written for teenage girls, again, influenced me greatly. I absolutely understood more of the feminine aspect after reading Judy Blume's books. That's the reality of it.
So book number 10, Cryon, The End Times by Lee Carroll, written in 1988 and published in 1993. Now, I know you have a history with Cryon, and this apparently is the best-selling book of all of his books.
It's the first book I read. It was, again, I had read some channel books. I was reading Ruth Montgomery. I was aware of Seth books. I hadn't read any of them, but I started getting all this information in the 70s and 80s and 90s about all this channel stuff. And one day I'm at Costco and I am filling up my cart full of Costco. I'm turning the corner to get in line with my cart. My cart hits these books that are stacked up because they had all these books stacked up on all these pallets trying to sell them to people. And all these books flipped over and went on the ground. So now I'm sitting down there frustrated, picking up all these books. I get to the checkout and one book had slipped its way in the bottom of the cart that I did not see. And it was a Cryon book. Why a Cryon book was carried at Costco, I still don't know, because that's not the normal.
No.
But they were there. They were there. And all of his books were there at that time. I think he only had four books out or three books out or something. But that book caught my attention. And when I read it, I had tears in my eyes. I was feeling home. I felt like, okay, now, you know, it's the same way I was feeling when I was reading Ruth Montgomery's stuff. It just really opened up and touched me. And I was able to read. He lived in the same city. I was able to reach out, touch bases with him and his wife at the time. We became friends. We started having lunch together once in a while and so forth. And I started traveling to several of the Cryon seminars at that point. I was part of the AOL team, the America Online team that kind of formed around the Cryon stuff. So I was kind of a groupie in a way that was fascinated by doing that stuff. So I kind of became part of his entourage, helped him put on some of the behind the scenes things and took care of certain aspects. And I did that for a couple of years. Really opened me up to this whole arena.
A lot of people love the Cryon books. And yet, you know, he's very well known. And yet, at the same time, he seems to, you know, walk his own path. You don't see him at all of the joint events going on. He just keeps on doing what he's doing and doing it very well.
No, that's true. He has a very focused area that he works with. He doesn't try to stretch out too much. He's invited other channels to come join him from time. I've been on his stage several times as a channel. It's been wonderful. But you're right. He focuses very clearly on his message, his stuff, and the interesting things that are there. Yeah.
Well, you mentioned, I mean, that is the 10th book, so we will talk about you now, but you did mention AOL, you know, and I'm sure there are a number of people who might be our age, you know, who are very familiar with that. Back in 1999, when you were beginning to take your teaching and channeling around the world, which is when I first met you, the whole spiritual arena seemed to be a very different and much simpler place than it is now. I mean, people were meeting like-minded others on message boards and nobody was trolling anybody back then. It was a lot kinder and more innocent, don't you think?
Absolutely was. Absolutely was. It was a different world. I think more people were just interested in awakening. There didn't seem to be the competition that we seem to have today. So there wasn't a struggle for trying to be better than the other person or do something at the same time as the other person. it was quite different at that point. And we all got in there together. We all said, okay, bring it on. Let's all learn together, basically, is what it was.
Yeah.
In the beginning, in the AOL chat room, which was actually a Cryon chat room at the time, we were all starting the channel. And it was really interesting because this day, we still have three professional channels that started in that chat room. Jeff Hoppe's one of them. Linda Mace was another one, and then myself. And we've been channeling for quite some time. So it was an interesting situation, I'll tell you.
It was a very interesting time, and I think everybody was very enthusiastic and happy. Now it seems to have got very professional, but also, it's become harder.
It's become more difficult. There's more people in the industry now. There's more people channeling than ever before. We just gave a channeling class on Espavo. And it was well attended. People were very excited about it. I've given channeling classes roughly once every year. I tend to give a channeling class because it's so valuable to people. They can use it in so many different ways. And this one was hugely attended. It was probably our best one so far this year. And it was really wonderful to see. But that's the empowerment that we try to show people. Not only can we bring you information from the group, but the group wants to tell you how to do it yourself. Real simple.
Do you believe it? Everybody can channel.
That's what the group says about it. They say, the joke's on you. You've all been channeling all along, but you call it different things. Over here, the artist gets a thought and he's able to put it down on canvas and he calls it his inspiration. And over here, a musician gets a sudden tune in his head and he starts playing it out on his guitar and he calls it inspiration or a new tune or whatever it is. Very few people actually call it channeling. When I first started channeling, when you and I first met, the word channeling was not commonplace usage. It is today.
Yeah.
In the proper way. People say it all the time. Actors say it all the time about channeling the character that they're supposed to be playing. It literally is in common usage all the time.
A lot of singers, I mean, I think Paul McCartney has talked about how he wakes up and the song's there, fully written. He knows the music. He knows it all. It's just there, like somebody gave him a gift. And, you know, it's interesting because we all get inspiration. A lot of people get what they call downloads these days. But actually calling it channeling is something that people are a little bit wary of. And I don't know why.
And I understand. And it's got some bad history to it. We're human beings. So even though we're bringing through pure information, we have to interpret it. So it's never going to be perfect. There will always be mistakes. There will always be misinterpretations. I consider myself to be a translator. That's really what this is. They drop in this incredible information, and it's my job to put it into words, to put it into language that other people can understand and to present it. And sometimes I do it spontaneously, which is what we call live channeling. Many times, I'm getting ready to do a Lightmaster course right after I leave you today. You want to know what I'm going to talk about? I don't know yet. The reality is and that's not true of most of my seminars. Most of my seminars I prepare. The group tells me ahead of time what we're going to talk about, where they want me to go, what the ideas are going to be. But many times the group is now working with the Light Masters, which is our highest level of people that we work with, our highest level class. They work with the Light Masters spontaneously. And most of the time, I don't know what the whole subject's going to be until afterwards. So that's just kind of what's taking place with it now.
Yeah.
Taking on a different flavor.
Do you recall the first time you were aware that you were channeling?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, in the very beginning, we had these people on America Online. So there was like a chat room that we would go into, or a message board is probably a better way to put it. And these are things that don't exist today. We call it Facebook today. We call it all these other things that took place. But we had our own, we had our Lightworker, which was our first site for many years. We had our own message board and we would have our own community and so forth. Cryon had one as well. We would kind of mix and go back and forth and be able to share energy in a lot of different places. And it was really helpful to have that community because that's really what these things were. But they it's totally different today. We didn't have all the difficulties we have. It seems like today when you put somebody up on a pedestal to give a message or something, everybody tries to knock them off. It's like, I'm uncomfortable with somebody telling me something that I don't know, so I need to bring them down to my level. Unfortunately, that happens a lot. And with all the way that the constructs of the message boards and the social media have been formed, it's going to be more of a problem going forward. I think we're going to see all sorts of challenges with social media. We're starting to uncover them because we haven't really discovered where all the challenges are coming from. We know we're separated. We know we're in different, we're living in different worlds. Sometimes we call that politics because it's around politics. Other times it's around other things. But the reality is social media has helped us build these little, the group calls them houses of mirrors. In other words, they only reflect our energy. We don't get to see the rest of the world out there. And that becomes separating. That becomes very challenging in a lot of ways.
Well, I want to return to what the group have to say about the technology, AI, and everything else that's happening now. But first, I want you to finish what you started to say and tell me that first time you channeled. And what it's like.
I got sidetracked with it. I do apologize.
Easily done.
First time I channeled, first time I received messages from the group, I was with a bunch of people on the beach in San Diego. Barbara, my wife, was into metaphysics. We were looking for something to do on New Year's Eve. I don't drink, so we're always looking for something interesting to do on New Year's Eve because of that. We don't go to big parties and stuff. And she had a gathering of her metaphysical group that was coming together to celebrate the new year coming. And they were all coming together. And I said, okay, honey, I'll go with you. It's your group. I've been watching you go. I've been watching the kids while you go play with these people and everything else. I'll go. And she said, I was very concerned because I didn't know all the language. I didn't know everything. I'm just going to smile and nod. That was my whole idea was, yep, I'm just going to do a lot of this all night long. I did. It was a wonderful group. They were very open, very accepting, no problem. We were supposed to meet back on the beach. We went home for a short time after midnight. We all hugged and kissed and wished everybody a happy new year. And then we were supposed to come back and meet on the beach at 5:30 in the morning when the sun was just starting to come up. So I built a big bonfire. I got there early because I felt like I wasn't able to participate in anything. But here, I'm a contractor, so I've got wood. I've got everything. I've got the truck. So I came and built this big bonfire before everybody got there. And I felt like I was part of the group. Well, at that point, we were supposed to take this paper that we had worked on all night, listing all the things that took place with us, all the things we were complete with on one side, and all the things we wanted to still work with on the other side. So it was kind of deciding what we were finished with and what we weren't. We were supposed to take that paper, tear it in half, wad it up, the side that we didn't want anymore, throw it in the fire, and read the other side. That was the idea. The rising sun, we had a smudge stick and everything we were supposed to do. We got there. I was hiding in the smoke. It's always a place where the smoke is. I wanted to see what everybody else was going to do. The leader gets up, grabs a thing, takes his stuff, tears it up, starts to throw it in, says, wait a minute. Says, I'm being told that Steve needs to go first. Okay. So here's, okay, so I just got a couple minutes. I just need to read this thing, throw this thing in, and I'm done. That's what I was thinking. So I rip this thing up, I throw it in, everybody says, ho. I hold this up, and I hold this thing up to the rising sun, and I can't read a word. It was completely blurred out to me, and I couldn't recall what was on that sheet. And all that came out of my mouth was that I will be a light worker. And that's the beginning of when I started channeling the group. I became aware that there were other entities around me. When I started channeling, I went back to my AOL group, to our online group, and we would start to do some of these things. And I came up with this idea of having a monthly meditation. That's where these channels first started coming in. And really coming in, and again, I set a monthly thing down to where we would do it. I tried to get everybody else's help. Everybody said, no, Steve, this is yours. You do it. And pretty soon I became aware that this stuff was way beyond what Steve was capable of or what Steve had knowledge of. And that's where it came from. And at one point I kept asking who they were. I wanted to know their names, their serial numbers, their ranks, everything else about them. And they basically said, no, we want you to take these messages for the love content of the message alone. And if it's not there, just know that that was placed for somebody else. It's not yours. You go for the love content of the message, plain and simple. We're not going to give you a name to tag onto. And I started writing. And people said, where's this coming from? Where's your channel coming from? I said, it was just a group of beings that are there, you know, talking. And people would come back and say, well, what does your group say about this? And that is where the words "the group" actually came from. It was a default thing that we actually ended up with because they didn't want to have us honor some big name of something. They want us to take it for the message alone.
And so who or what are they? Are they angelic beings?
Yeah, they told me at one point that they were from what we would call the angelic realm. That's correct. Yeah. They basically say we have massive misconnections, misideas about what's the other side of the veil is like. We tried to cover some of that in the latest book that I wrote, Crossing the Veil, because everybody's interested in what's on the other side. What does that feel like? What happens when you go home and when you die, when you leave your body? So we tried to do everything I could to bring that up and to talk about some of the things that were there talking about it. But it's very confusing because you're a part of everything when you go home. There is no separation. And that is very difficult for us to realize. And yet we can start living our lives that way now. It opens the door for everything. But if we do that, then certain things aren't going to be possible. We can't have war. We're not going to have all these takeovers that we're having. We're not going to have all this influence that we're seeing.
Yeah.
It'll be quite different.
Yeah. So you've been channeling the group for over 28 years, and I know that they gave you the information. You were the first person to talk about crystal children. We had the indigo children and then crystal children. Some people call them star children today.
Right.
What the information they've been giving you has been very accurate. What are they saying now? Because we're in such an interesting place, a completely unprecedented in our history, I think. And, transformation is on the table if we want it. So what are they telling you?
Well, the kids came in basically setting a whole different level. The indigos came in and kind of broke everything apart, which is kind of their job. They were the system busters. The crystal children came in with incredible empathy. The empathic abilities of the crystal children is beyond understanding. They actually needed protection more than a lot of things, which is why I never wrote a book about the crystal children. Other people have written books about the crystal children, but the reality is the group wanted us to know about them. They wanted us to see the evolution of humanity, which is what this is about. But the crystal children today are carrying the Christed energy, and they have all kinds of wonderful capabilities and yet still not being fully accepted here on the planet. So there's a lot of hiding still going on to this day. Most of these children are older. They're not kids anymore, and there's more and more of them coming in. So eventually this higher state of being will be the norm, and that's the idea of what's been taking place. with the indigos coming in, changing everything, making us think differently about children, the crystal children coming in and grounding that spirituality, grounding the ability to have this empathy and to be able to walk around with it and use it in daily life instead of protect yourself. So that's what the crystal children are all about. They've got incredible gifts. Most of them are aware of their gifts, and most of them hide their gifts.
Yeah,
they don't typically fit in. But that's kind of where we're at today. There's more and more of the crystal children coming in. We don't call them crystal children anymore. We call them empaths. We call them, there's so many of them coming in now that it's becoming a quiet move, a quiet takeover.
Yeah, we just call them today's kids.
Yeah, we call them kids. Exactly.
Who are very different. Yeah, would you put the autistic population in that category?
Yes, there are gifts of autism that we still have not seen fully. We think of them as being a handicap, of being challenged, because that's what we see. We see the difficulties they have. We don't always see the positivity of it, because basically they have one or two areas that they are going to extremely exceed in. And if we find those areas and encourage them and find them a space to use that, they're going to be very valuable on this planet and open a lot of doors for us in the future going forward.
Well, we've certainly seen that, Silicon Valley is chock full of, or was chock full of, people who definitely had on the spectrum qualities about them.
Mm. That's true. That's true. Yeah, we're finding out much more about that. And the reality is we're also getting a lot more tolerant of people that have social interaction skills, that have deficits when it comes to their social interaction skills.
Yeah.
We're learning to be more tolerant because of some of these things as well. So the general population is picking up a lot of things as well as what they're bringing in from the gifts that they'll bring in as well.
So what else are they telling you? Because this year we have this massive big eclipse on April the 8th, which, if anybody doesn't know, and they, it depends who they follow, crosses the path of the previous one in 2017. And the crossing point is Texas. And so astrologers are saying, watch what happens in Texas later this year. Good. Are the group telling you anything about this?
No, they basically said that is true, that there is a wave of energy, because they typically describe it differently to me. They don't point and say this person's got this and this person's got that. But they basically share with me that there is a wave of energy coming in, that it's starting to come in now and actually starting to filter in. It will be here all through April. It will culminate with this timeline cross that you're talking about, several of the other aspects that are taking place. We should see a lot of people awakening. We are going to see people go into fear at the same time. So that's typical of what typically happens. But if we can anchor this and move it in the right direction, it can be huge. And there should be a lot of people looking for answers, which is perfect. Absolutely perfect. Go ahead.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you if you had more to add to that.
No, that's all.
Is humanity, going to make it? We're at our worst point of separation and division.
We've got a lot of things going on, which are absolutely incredible with the separation. A lot of the separation has been intentional, has been motivated by either money or politics or something of that nature. So we've had a lot of that. It's going to get worse during this year, obviously. The elections in the United States are going to bring out some of the worst of it. On top of that, we have three huge things that are taking place with the internet that are going to change our world again. And when I say that, I mean, if you can think back of before computers, what that was like, the changes that we are now facing in front of us are going to be that almost 10 times over the amount of change. And the first one, of course, is AI. And by the way, we talked about those words disappearing like crystal children. AI is going to disappear very quick because it is everywhere, absolutely everywhere. It's in everything. NVIDIA just released a new chip. The chip actually has AI in it, which means that right now, if we want to use AI, we have to go on the internet. Well, not for long. It looks like the chips are going to actually land in the computers that we're all using. Eventually, your cell phone, I'm sure, is going to have the chips that will hold AI as well, which means that it will not just learn, it'll learn you. It'll learn how you pronounce things. It will learn specifically about you. So we're getting to a point where we're losing a lot of our individuality because of AI. AI is very scary. There's a lot of things that are going to be used by bad actors. And at the same time, it holds possibilities for greatness and huge change that we can use. We may be able to find out some of our pollution problems with the help of AI. We may be able to find out more about how to communicate and how to resolve some of this differential, some of this separation through AI. We're liable to find a lot of things that are right there through it, but that's only one of them. That's changing, and it's here. I mean, and there's no putting the genie back in the bottle ever. So it's absolutely here. It's taking over. It's working positively for most of us. We will use it. We'll see bad actors using it inappropriately. Mm. The second part is coming that we don't know too much about, and that's called quantum computing. Quantum computing, there's probably only 15 quantum computers in the world right now. Google owns three of them. Three of them are in China. They're in different places throughout the world. Microsoft owns a couple. They're working on a larger system of computing, which works off of basically quantum physics. It's in a different world entirely. It will change everything. The capabilities of computing on this machine are off the chart. And eventually, right now, they take up half a room, but isn't that the same thing that happened when computers came along? They took up a whole room and everything else. And right now, they're still in this big stage, but they are coming, and they're coming very fast. That will also change our world very quickly. On top of that, the third thing that's going to change our world is war. War has moved online. And we don't know it. We're busy with the war right now in Ukraine. We're busy with the war in Gaza. We're busy with all the things that are going on from force. But the reality is most war has moved online. We've been under attack here in the United States and came very close to losing control of many of our subsystems only last week. China has been found to be in many of our systems, our distribution systems, our telecommunication systems, our internet, the routers that form the internet. They've been involved in the transportation. They've been involved in all the big areas they have hacked into, able to bring us down at any point. And that is where war is. Now, we've discovered it, and the head of the FBI, Christopher Wray, said a couple days ago, he says, no, we've got it all now. We found all the places that they've broken into all of our computer. That's nonsense. They're trying to calm the people down. They have not found it. It's everywhere. And China's not the only one. You've got Russia. You've got North Korea. You've got all these places. You've got Moldova. You've got all these places that are hacking into them. And the United States. We're the ones that started this whole war. We're the ones that started hacking online in the first place. So we can't exactly complain about it, but I will tell you, war has moved online. And people may be aware that the internet suddenly slows down for no reason, or major sites that should never slow down suddenly are slowed way down or are not working properly.
Yeah.
Most of the time, those companies are never going to tell you they were hacked. They don't want you to know that. They don't want you to lose faith. And they're not required to. So they just tell you, oh, we had a glitch, we had a problem, whatever, we fixed it. And do it. But this is the new level of war on our planet. And we are not prepared for it here in the United States. I don't think people are prepared for it in different parts of the world. We need to become aware of that.
That's very clear. It's very clear. I mean, I went into a bank once in England and their computers were down and nobody had a clue what to do. They couldn't give money. They couldn't take money. They couldn't do anything. I mean, you know, we've got rid of a lot of the old systems and some of them, you know, they have their uses still.
Yeah, they did. They absolutely did. So now, we've seen a lot of this going on. I had a challenge with my bank. I had something I had to report. They basically sent me something. This is good. Report this in the next 5 hours and you're no problem. We'll cancel it. And I reported it, but I couldn't get through for 16 hours. Mm-hmm. You couldn't get through to the bank. They were being hacked.
Yeah.
And they will never say that. They'll never say that. But it was 3 days where you could not get through to the bank at all. And it was a large bank here in the United States. Yeah. So anyway, yeah, we're seeing this happen on a regular basis here. In some ways, it's going to be very frustrating. We're going to see a lot of aggression going forward here. And we have the opportunity to turn it, especially with what's happening here in April, with the awakening of people, to be able to start to put our hearts back into our energy and change this world. Real simple. And it doesn't have to be behind a leader. It doesn't have to be behind a person. We don't have to choose this or choose that. We can do it all by simply coming together and sharing our energy, sharing our light. Hmm.
Do you think that that's what we'll do? Do you think that ultimately we will get through this tumultuous period and people will be more unity conscious?
Right now, I'd have to say that I'd have to call it 50-50. It's right at the tilting point where it can go either direction. If it goes in the difficult direction, it'll only go that way for a short time. Humans will only withstand so much stuff before they change it. And that's happened over and over and over again. You know, we had the whole thing with Henry Ford. I don't know if you're familiar with it or not, but Henry Ford was promoting promoting authoritarianism. He basically thought that democracy was a bad thing.
Okay.
And was promoting authoritarianism. He actually wrote a book about it. He did a podcast on, he bought a radio station basically and did a radio interview every so often, telling people how democracy was finished and it should go away and so forth. And that book that he wrote with his wife ended up in the hands of another ruler, Adolf Hitler, who actually took that information and used it and even credited Henry Ford for the ideas. He mentioned Henry Ford in Mein Kampf. He's mentioned right there. So there was a connection here going, and all of the United States was moving in that direction, kind of like we are now, moving toward a very difficult situation. And then something happened. At that time, we got attacked. Japan attacked Pearl Harbor. It changed everything because people will tolerate so much and then finally something will take place and will change and will take over. We'll bring it back to where it works. And I'm hoping that that will be something good, not something negative, because we can do that, but there is a change coming. And I'm hoping it's going to be in April. Be honest, we'll do this next month.
I think that's the trigger point of it all. Absolutely. We are almost out of time now, Steve, so we're going to have to leave it here. If there's one thing that you want to leave people with, one message from the group, a positive one, hopefully, what would it be?
We're all in this together. You know, Sandy and I talked about the separation, where we are right now with all of everybody living in different worlds and so forth. The group keeps telling us if we pull back far enough, we can see that we're connected. We can see that no matter what side you're on of anything, both sides probably want the same thing. And if we can pull back to see that connection, we can change everything right now. That's the message.
Good message to leave the show on. Steve Rother, thank you for adding your 10 best list of spiritual books to the No BS Spiritual Book Club's library of recommendations.
Thanks, Sandy.
Steve Rother's books include Remember, A Handbook for Human Evolution, which has been updated. Welcome Home, The New Planet Earth, Spiritual Psychology, The 12 Primary Life Lessons, and So I'm God, Now What? Tools for Empowered Humans, to name just a few of the many books that he's published. For more information about his work, books, online seminars and live events, visit espavo.org. That's it for this week. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer. I'll be back at the same time next week with another 10 Best Interview for the No BS Spiritual Book Club. Till then, it's goodbye from me. And thanks again to Steve Rother.
Thanks, Sandy.